This is Radio Equal Shot with your host, Alex Smith.
While I can't promise you dirt on presidents and porn stars, you will get the real bomb in our next interview. Nobody could make up the twists and turns in the high-stakes game of atomic weapons. Haven't you heard? The nuclear arms race is back, and there's big money to be made. As long as nothing blows up in our faces. We are going to talk about a suicide cult run by the American government. In May, the Trump administration announced they would abandon a multi-billion-dollar nuclear construction project in South Carolina. That's the good news. It was intended to add deadly plutonium to nuclear reactor fuel. It was a terrible idea. Nobody wanted that product. But we can't lose the jobs or the boondoggle billions, so here's an even crazier idea. Let's build more triggers for nuclear bombs we can't use. We'll just add them to thousands and thousands of other plutonium triggers sitting in a warehouse somewhere outside Amarillo, Texas. It's all painfully crazy, but we have to talk about it because that's the plan. In New Mexico, the Los Alamos National Laboratory tried to build the same plutonium pits. That operation has been shut down for a few years due to wildly unsafe working conditions with plutonium. All that is carefully witnessed by a small but powerful environmental nonprofit called NukeWatch. Jay Coghlan is the executive director of Nuclear Watch New Mexico. Jay, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Well, thank you for having me.
I hate talking about this stuff. Many people tune out or don't download when we cover anything nuclear, especially nuclear weapons. It's just too crazy to hear about, I guess. Jay, do you encounter that eye-rolling resistance?
I do some. Kind of my typical response, I like to invoke a cliche, and it's, you may not be interested in politics, but politics is interested in you. And for the sake of this show, I would translate it into, you may not want to talk about nuclear weapons, but nuclear weapons could ruin your whole day. They're interested in you.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's start with the basics in case somebody doesn't know. What is plutonium, and is it found in nature?
Oddly enough, yes, it is found in nature, but it was found after it was made man-made in a reactor. And the only instance I know of is in the Congo in Africa, where there was an extremely unusually rich bed of uranium ore. And in effect, it acted as a natural reactor producing plutonium from the uranium. Now, that's just kind of a footnote. It's really all about the man-made produced plutonium in reactors. And there's various isotopes of plutonium, but the isotope of choice for nuclear weapons is plutonium-239 with a half-life of 24,000 years. That's good in the sense that plutonium pits last a long time. It's bad in the sense that the waste, the excess plutonium, remains dangerous for more than 100,000 years.
And the government wants to double their production facilities to make something called plutonium pits. What are those?
Well, first of all, it's quadruple production from roughly 20 to, now they call it at least 80 per year. But pits, you know, just an amusing side note, but I once went to Russia and had a fact sheet translated. And I looked up and saw that my Russian audience was very puzzled, and it turned out that the word pit had been inadvertently translated as like a hole in the ground or a shaft. So that's not what it is. It's like the pit of a peach, the core. And in this case, it's a roughly softball-sized sphere of plutonium that's actually hollow, and into the hollowness, into the hollow at the a nanosecond before detonation, a radioactive gaseous isotope of hydrogen is injected, that being tritium. So they basically explode together. The plutonium fissions, in turn inducing fusion with the tritium, which turns around and boosts, that's the word that's used, boosts the remaining plutonium. And that's the way that all modern plutonium pits, also called triggers for nuclear weapons, that's, you know, the essence of their design. They're surrounded by high explosives that symmetrically implode the pit so that it can reach a critical mass, which attains temperatures and pressures like that of the sun. But then that results in the nuclear detonation almost instantaneously.
I can't imagine anything more dangerous.
It's certainly up there in the very most dangerous. And I'd have to interject, especially given that we have what I would politely say are some rash, impulsive world leaders.
Well, sure. What's the point of having nuclear weapons if you can't use them on somebody? And what we're talking about here is incinerating possibly entire megacities with bombs. That's the purpose of this plan. Let's get back to the original purpose of the South Carolina MOX, as they call it, nuclear fuel plant. Where is it, and why is that being abandoned?
The MOX plant, that's MOX is mixed oxide, which, you know, doesn't mean that much for the listeners. But as you described it, it was to fabricate nuclear reactor rods with plutonium in it so that it would so-called burn the plutonium as a non-proliferation measure to help get rid of military stocks of plutonium. And just to give this context, both the U.S. and Russia agreed to get rid of 34 tons of plutonium each, which, you know, could make tens of thousands of nuclear weapons. So on the surface, the MOX program sounds good. In reality, rather than being a non-proliferation program, it was arguably a proliferation program, the opposite of what was claimed, in the sense that it was introducing plutonium into the global market. So that's number one. Number two is just the MOX fuel fabrication facility, that's what it's called, in Aiken, South Carolina, which is almost on the border of Georgia, just across from the Savannah River. It just became such a boondoggle. The costs escalated. The schedule was way overextended. So it just became this huge money sink. So the U.S. Department of Energy finally decided to pull the plug on it, although it's stopping the project is facing fierce resistance from the South Carolina congressional delegation and particularly Senator Lindsey Graham, who is a powerful senator and sits on the Armed Services Committee. But in short, that's the status of the MOX plant at the Savannah River site in South Carolina. And then what we're talking mostly about now is the fact that the Department of Energy now plans to turn that plant into a pit production facility.
And there's a government agency involved here that I hadn't heard about, and I'm into nuclear things. What is the National Nuclear Security Administration?
It is a semi-autonomous agency that runs all the nuclear weapons programs within the Department of Energy. And it came in existence in the year 2000, principally because of my then and now deceased Senator Pete Domenici, who the weapons labs called St. Pete for the money, for the buckets of money that he would arrange for him. But I want to note a very ironic piece, is that some of your listeners may be familiar with the name Wen-Ho Lee, and that was this big espionage case in the late 1990s, and a Chinese-American who, you know, some argue he was singled out because of his ethnicity. But in short, he actually did solitary time while waiting for his trial. To make a long story short, the government's case fell apart against him. The federal judge made a public apology to Wen-Ho Lee. But the point I'm making is, and this is the irony, is it's the Wen-Ho Lee case that propelled the creation of this semi-autonomous nuclear weapons agency within the Department of Energy. And the rationale was to fix various security problems that were going on, including, you know, the alleged Wen-Ho Lee affair. The irony is, after NNSA was created, that's when some very serious and real security problems occurred, and they occurred mostly at Los Alamos Lab.
I heard they got practically everything Los Alamos had and went straight to China.
I wouldn't be able to verify that.
All right, that's just a rumor. So meanwhile, we're talking about putting more plutonium handling facilities into South Carolina, and the South Carolina, aren't they suing the federal government to get plutonium out of that Savannah River nuclear weapons site?
That is correct. The federal government, and specifically the Department of Energy, agreed that there would be only so much plutonium at the Savannah River site. And not only agreed to so much, but that it had to decrease over time. And the exit strategy for that plutonium was the MOX program that we were just talking about, but now the MOX program is canceled. Now, DOE is starting to formulate a plan to, you know, they call it dilute and dispose, where they will dilute the plutonium and send them to the only hole in the ground that exists for radioactive waste in the United States, which is the Waste Isolation Pilot Plant in southern New Mexico. But, you know, that's still years off. So as you've said, the state of South Carolina is suing the Department of Energy over its failure to begin to dispose of plutonium and getting it out of South Carolina. So it's quite a contentious issue in South Carolina. And here I speculate that this recent decision by the Department of Energy to begin producing plutonium pits at the Savannah River site, which would be a completely new mission there. They're starting from scratch. But in part, that could be a political maneuver to help improve DOE's relationship with the state of South Carolina. And again, that's just speculation on my part.
But I thought the Los Alamos National Laboratory, near you, or in your state at least, had plutonium handling labs. Why isn't the plutonium pit production just performed there?
Now, first of all, I'm in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and I'm looking out my living room right now, 20 miles away, and I can see Los Alamos Lab.
Okay.
But as you noted, you know, first of all, Los Alamos is the birthplace of plutonium pit production. And, you know, giving credit where credit's due, that is the amazing technical feat that Los Alamos under J.R. Oppenheimer achieved during the World War II years. And it was a plutonium pit that they blew up at the Trinity test on July 16, 1945. Then they dropped a bomb on Hiroshima August 6, 1945. Now, that was a uranium bomb, which is a much simpler design. So they didn't even bother testing it, and the first test was, in fact, destroying Hiroshima. Now, Nagasaki, that was a plutonium bomb. And this illustrates how a plutonium pit is a weapon unto itself. Now, it's not a nuclear weapon, it's an atomic weapon. And when we say refer to plutonium pits being triggers nowadays, it's also sometimes called primaries. So it is the initial step, which in turn induces fusion in the second stage. And the way I like to put it, that's what puts the H in H-bomb. But again, as you noted, Los Alamos has existing plutonium pit production facilities, and they were producing a limited number of plutonium pits up until 2011, and then they just started experiencing this non-ending series of near misses, of potential nuclear criticality incidences. And that's where you have too much special nuclear material together in one place at one time, and that can have a spontaneous neutron flux, which can literally fry people. So it's this ongoing series of problems they suspended major plutonium operations at Los Alamos for more than 3 years. And, you know, I suspect that DOE just got fed up with it. And also I'm told that the Pentagon, out of an abundance of caution, is insisting on two different locations for pit production, you know, as you might call it, a fail-safe measure. But I hasten to point out to your listeners that plutonium pit production, first of all, we have already, the U.S. has, up to 20,000 plutonium pits already sitting down at the Pantex plant outside of Amarillo, Texas. So that's for starters. And future production is not to maintain the safety and reliability of the existing nuclear weapons stockpile. Instead, it is for future new designs. And that's a fact.
Okay, I'm going to get right back to that.
If you have a story idea or thoughts on something you've heard, contact us, radio@eagleshock.org. That's radio@eagleshock.org.
This is Alex Smith, and you are listening to Radio EcoShock. Our guest is Jay Coghlan, the executive director of Nuclear Watch New Mexico. We're talking about the madness of making even more plutonium triggers or weapons for America. And you just mentioned the new design nuclear weapons had been proposed, and I wonder, is that to compete with the new nuclear weapons and delivery systems announced by the Russians this year? Can that be used, Jay, as a justification for needing new nuclear weapons?
Well, these new nuclear weapons, the American ones, were already proposed before all the publicity about the new Russian weapons. But that's just kind of a detail. The main point I would like to stress, since you brought this up, is, and I really want your listeners to know this, the U.S. and Russia are very much back into a nuclear arms race, which just seems absurd. I mean, you know, the Cold War ended. You pick a year. It's hard to, you know, well, the Berlin Wall fell in 1989, and the Soviet Union dissolved in 1992. So here we are, more than 25 years later, and we're back in an arms race with Russia. And I just view this as so unnecessary. And I'm sad to report that the older I get, the more cynical I'm getting. And the reason I say that is, over the years, my belief grows stronger that, at least in the United States, a lot of this is just plain driven by contractor greed, that the profit motive is a very strong driver in all of this. And in fact, we have three nuclear weapons labs here in the U.S. in my beloved state of New Mexico, otherwise known as the land of enchantment. It's privileged, I say that somewhat sarcastically, to have two of the three American nuclear weapons labs. But a little known fact is that the directors of all three labs wear two hats. And the first is as lab director. And believe me, they have a whole lot of power because they have to stand in front of Congress every year and testify that the stockpile is safe and reliable. And all hell would break loose if they said the stockpile wasn't. But the second hat that they wear is as presidents of the executive committees of for-profit limited liability corporations that run the labs. So I am definitely asserting that the profit motive drives things.
And it's not just competition with the Russians. You know, I was reading an article by Patrick Malone at the Center for Public Integrity, and he said a fellow named Philip Kalbos, one of the NNSA's principal assistant deputy administrator for defense. And Kalbos told a panel, quote, "It's not lost on anyone that there are nations out there that produce more pits than we do, including the North Koreans. And that's one of the reasons we need to get moving in terms of our capability." So, Jay, when it comes to nuclear weapons, America needs to keep up with North Korea?
You know, that is a political... I regard that as political propaganda. Now, that said, we have briefly touched upon all of the problems that Los Alamos has had. But I believe, for one thing, that the U.S. simply has quite high and stringent standards when it comes to actually qualifying a plutonium pit for the stockpile. And in fact, when they send a pit after producing it to the stockpile, after it goes through the many, many tests, and by that I don't mean a full-scale nuclear test, but after it goes through the whole process, they call it a diamond-stamped pit. So the American process is extremely rigorous. And I'm going to make clear that the details are classified, so I'm not going to pretend to be a know-it-all here. And this is somewhat informed speculation, I'll put it this way. But again, the American standards are going to be far higher than Russian standards, far higher than North Korean standards. And if the U.S. had to produce a plutonium pit, by God, they could do it tomorrow. I'm quite confident of that. But this has definitely become a big propaganda piece among the U.S. nuclear weaponeers and boosters. They're saying, oh my God, out of the 9 nuclear weapons powers, only the U.S. cannot produce a plutonium pit. I don't think that really withstands deeper scrutiny.
Well, we were talking about safety, and a whole lot of plutonium pits were made in Colorado at the now-closed Rocky Flats site, and safety there was so bad, the FBI raided Rocky Flats in 1989, and you wonder what it takes for the FBI to raid a nuclear weapons production outfit. And I spent last night reading through some horror stories from Los Alamos Lab, and it kind of kept me awake past 2 in the morning just thinking about that. I'm not terribly well informed on this, so is there a possibility for an actual nuclear explosion if there was an accident at one of these plutonium factories?
No. Not a nuclear explosion, but you could have a neutron flux, as I've already mentioned, which can fry people, but that's not the same thing as an explosion. You could have dispersal of plutonium, which is especially dangerous if it's in powdered form and is respirable, that is, in a form where it's in the air and you can breathe it, and plutonium is known to be a high risk factor for lung cancers. But an actual explosion, no. There is a possible exception with highly enriched uranium, different from plutonium. And in theory, now this is only in theory, but you could hold, and the numbers are going to be classified, but you could hold, say, 15 pounds, if you're suicidal, 15 pounds of highly enriched uranium in one hand and 15 pounds in the other, and then clap your hands and kiss your butt goodbye. But, I'm not Chicken Little here. The risks of an actual nuclear explosion in one of these manufacturing facilities, no. But that's not to undermine the fact that there are high risks. Otherwise.
Well, there's huge risks, I think, to the people who work there and the people in the surrounding areas. But also, the major risk is that somebody, perhaps even President Trump, will decide they should use a nuclear weapon and incinerate millions of people. So have you heard of any citizen resistance in South Carolina to the announced plan to make plutonium pits?
That area is full of boosters. Now, that said, I have a close colleague in South Carolina, and he and I are actively talking about how to catalyze greater public resistance to moving pit production there. And there's wild claims being made by local politicians in both South Carolina and New Mexico about the jobs that will be produced. And I've asked for solid data on job creation and just from the Department of Energy and even my own congressional delegation, and so far I'm not able to get it. But you have to understand that on the local level, the rationale for these programs is threefold. jobs, jobs, jobs. Never mind the fact that military jobs or military funding has the lowest economic multiplying benefit of all. You know, the Trump administration is, for example, is radically cutting federal funding for research into renewable energies, and that is what would really be a job producer, and is also holding funding for cleanup flat, which again would be a real job producer, and instead, in part, that pays for ever-increasing budgets for nuclear weapons programs. And you mentioned the National Nuclear Security Administration. Its budget for nuclear weapons programs is taking a 19% jump from 2018 to 2019. So weapons programs are very much on the rise, and local politicians use their jobs as the rationale for doing that. I find that pretty distasteful. These are, you know, weapons of more than just mass destruction. They can be weapons of global destruction. And to me, it's just distasteful to explain them away for the sake of jobs, and a limited number of jobs at that.
Talk to us about your own organization, Nuclear Watch, and your fight against plutonium pits in New Mexico.
Oh, we're a small outfit. As some people have put it, I like this phrase, we punch above our weight because we are small. I've been in this field of work for just short of 30 years. And, you know, my day job is that of being an activist. And part of my job as an activist is to encourage others to be active. And I do want to say, myself personally and NukeWatch, you know, we certainly have drawn blood. I'm not saying we can kill the beast, but we certainly have drawn blood with the labs, successful litigation, you know, that kind of thing. But I want to use this as encouragement to your listeners that if you get up, get off of the couch, get active, you know, in whatever issue captures you, I'm personally amazed at the success I've had. And I hope I don't sound immodest. That's not my point. My point is not to boast. My point is to encourage others to be active on whatever issue really gets you. And if you begin to be active and you stick with it, you can, and you know, it takes time, of course. It takes time. But I think, like me, you could end up being amazed that, you know, I'm going to call myself, you know, an average citizen or whatever. You know, I don't have a PhD or anything, but I'm simply amazed by the success I've had. And, dear listener, you can do it too.
We've been talking with Jay Coghlan, the executive director of Nuclear Watch New Mexico. Find them at nukewatch.org. I'll put more links to this story in my show blog at ecoshock.org. Jay, thank you for fighting to shine the light in such dark places, and thank you for talking with us.
You're most welcome.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
Radio EcoShock.
On the Nuclear Watch New Mexico website, I found these words from the famous American general Omar Bradley. Ours is a world of nuclear giants and ethical infants. Thank you for listening and caring about our world.